Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Hey guys, welcome to episode 207 of My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast, and I don't have a guest per se this week, but what I have done is something I did similar a couple weeks ago with Abyss, pulling some audio from the Impact Wrestling podcast of sorts. They do a media availability, and I was able to record part of it. I stayed online, and I'm going to figure out how I'm going to be able to get in there and ask some questions as well. Wasn't able to do it again this time around, but Taya Valkyrie is the subject, the person who is being interviewed, and so she's going to talk. This was all before her big match against Tessa Blanchard, the rematch for the Knockouts Championship. Of course, Taya won that match by disqualification. Tessa Blanchard knocked out referee Brandon Toll during the course of that match. So I'm using this one, this particular podcast for this week. It's been a crazy couple of weeks, and the next couple of weeks are even more crazy. It's all going to make sense very soon as to why I'm doing things the way I'm doing them right now, but I can't go into great detail at this point. But it's going to all make sense. Next week, Chad is going to join me on the show. We're going to actually knock that podcast out, record it early. But I'm starting a new feature, a new segment on My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast, called Things That Don't Age Well. And first up, it's going to be Rowdy Roddy Piper and Adorable Adrian Adonis, their feud, the War of Words, more specifically, and how in 1986, those things were okay, or at least accepted, whereas in 2018, these kinds of things would not be so PC, if you will. And we're going to examine other instances in the world of professional wrestling. And we're not knocking anyone. We're not judging. We're just kind of going back and analyzing things that happened then and how and why that would not work in today's culture. So I'm looking forward to recording that one as well. That'll be episode 208 of My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast, which will drop next week. Before we get to Taya, though, I do want to remind everyone who has been following the whole Stride Pro Wrestling search for a new home, we have one. And on Saturday night, November 10th, this upcoming weekend, if you're listening as the show drops, Stride Pro Wrestling will be taking over in its new home, a new location, 1130 North Division Street in Carterville, Illinois. Carterville has been very kind to us through the last year or so since we lost our venue at the Illinois Star Center Mall. As far as having monthly shows there, we were still able to have the ring set up and train and practice. However, we had to hit the road and take up several spots, including the Carterville Community Center, Carterville Junior High School, John A. Logan College. So I want to thank all of those folks for giving us temporary places to stay. But now we have a new home. It is going to be the Stride Pro Wrestling Arena. It's right off of Division Street in downtown Carterville. If you have questions, let me know. We'll get you there. But be sure to be there because Saturday night, November 10th, Heath Hatton defends the Stride Pro Wrestling Heavyweight Championship against Chris Hargis. That is the main event. As always, bell time 6:30. Axe Allwirt takes on Tony Flood. Wraith gets a rematch for the Legacy title against the new champion, Aaron Brooks. So it's going to be a night filled with action, and you won't want to miss it. Trust me on that as we kind of set our sights into 2019 and year three of Stride Pro Wrestling. It's hard to believe that this company, this great company, has been around for as long as it has, and I'm very appreciative to be a part and involved with it. And I am so looking forward to the fans coming out and seeing our new digs, our new facility on Saturday night, November 10th. So I think, you know, I'm not going to go into Crown Jewel. I did not watch it, and it wasn't necessarily for political reasons. And I know that may disappoint or not go over well with some. It's just a timing issue. Again, I'm working now two jobs. And also is trying to build and develop the brand here of My123Cents, which is almost a full-time job in and of itself. I digress, though. I'm not complaining. I love the hustle. I'm getting recharged and re-energized. And that extra hour of sleep on Daylight Savings did help. So I appreciate everyone's support and friendship. Keep it up. Keep listening to Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network, Greg Mahochko, Chad Smart, who, again, will be joining me on next week's episode of My123Cents. But be sure to check out Positive Cynicism, the Five Heart Podcast, and Nerds United, all right here on Jittery Monkey. Now, without any further ado, here is Taya Valkyrie.
What I wanted to ask was the shift in your character to return, obviously, for Mafia's Bank for Glory, you're very much in the heel role, and coming back, you're now very much in a face role facing Taya. The question I had was, what's brought about that change, and was it something that you prefer to do and pushed for on your return?
I mean, I think that if you know my career, you know that I've tried to evolve and change and, you know, transform. I feel like a character can be the same but change at the same time. Like people, you know, characters in movies or television shows. So, I mean, with everything that's happened in my personal life, I feel like that shifts certain things in my character. The last year had so many ups and downs from, you know, waiting for a long time to become a permanent resident in the U.S., which is a privilege of travel, to be so happy and be elated with my, you know, marrying the man of my dreams, to, you know, us buying a house, to this, to that. Like, there's, like, it's just been so many ups and downs personally that, like, it just felt like after everything and all the time that went by, I wasn't the same. I was not the same person. I had changed. I had worked harder on myself. I worked harder on my self-esteem. I worked harder on my wrestling. I was working harder personally on, you know, my personal life, and I just created all these goals and these new goals and aspirations for my comeback to Impact, but there's no way I could return the same. So what you're seeing is just like an evolution of me personally, of myself outside of wrestling, and now in the Impact Zone. And I'm feeling very happy with the way that it's come. I felt like there's like a new fire lit in me at Bound for Glory. I've like never, I mean, I'm nervous all the time for matches, but I felt like that was like very intense for me. And I'm sure that it showed. So, you know, I think this is a very positive thing. You're seeing me in my natural element right now. So I hope everyone's enjoying it. And it's only going to change and grow from the year. So,
in the build-up to Bound for Glory, you were the victim of cyberbullying, which is which is something that impacts a lot of young people, particularly middle school students, teenagers. I'm wondering if you have any advice or comments to fans of yours who look up to you and might be experiencing something similar.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I was bullied a lot growing up, so I have so much, like, personal emotion and connection to that kind of stuff, and I can't imagine what it's like now. I mean, for me, it's hard even as an adult. So as a child, to be growing up in a world of social media and where everyone's tied behind a screen and a laptop and a keyboard and say whatever they want. I mean, for me, as a grown-ass woman, it was hard. So I don't know. It's just, everyone, this is life. Be nice to each other. Like, I don't understand why people have to feel the need to say certain things. I was not taught to act like that. I didn't grow up in a family that taught me to act like that. My friends and I support each other. You can, you know, dislike somebody, but you don't have to be, you just don't have to act like that. This world is full of really bad people, and, like, we just don't need the kind of attitude and stuff being spewed out in the universe when there are so many positive things happening. And to any child that's listening or a fan of mine or teenager, adult, someone who's older than me, like, hold your head up high, because at the end of the day, you're the only person in this entire world and universe is like you. So, yeah, not everybody's going to like you. Not everybody's going to think you're nice. Not everybody's going to think you're prettier, whatever it is. But there's a huge amount of people out there that do love you. So keep your head up and move forward.
I wanted to ask, I'm really enjoying your husband, Johnny, on Survivor. I'm a big Survivor fan. do you have any interest in going to the island at all?
Oh my gosh, absolutely not. It was hard enough for me to, you know, be away from him for that long, and it was a really hard time in my life because I was planning our wedding and, like, doing all these, you know, getting everything prepared, and people don't realize that when someone goes on a show like that, you cannot speak to them at all. So I didn't speak to him for almost 2 months, and anyone that was in my personal circle knew how hard that was for me. I have no interest in putting him through that, and I also just, I think I would be interested more in doing something like the Amazing Race or a competition. Based shows that way and have John as my partner, and I also do not do well with starving or being cold, so I would be a horrible survivor. I would not do well, and I can get very hangry, so I don't think that anybody should have to witness that on television.
And Josh, are you still there? Or Josh Lee?
Still here, buddy.
Okay, I got a question. I have a question for you too, Josh, since I've got you. I talked last week about the time change. Obviously, there was a drop in viewership, which you guys were expecting, but it was pretty significant. I just was wondering if you had any notes about how the DVR viewership was, or if you guys had had any talks with Pop TV about possibly moving the time slot back.
Everyone gets so caught up in these overnights. I haven't looked over at the DVR numbers yet, but then, you know, the most important number that everyone needs to really start honing in on is what our key demo is, what that number is, more so than when the over. I mean, yeah, we expected a drop, to see a drop like we saw wasn't a surprise. It was, okay, this is what 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock looks like, but it's that key demo number. And, you know, again, I'll say the same thing I said last week. I don't know what night of the week my favorite shows are, because I watch everything on Hulu and I watch everything on Netflix. At this point, I'm 38 with a kid, so we don't have the luxury of sitting down when our shows are on. We watch them when we can. So I think that in 2018, that's the way people have to watch Impact. And, you know, 10 p.m., every Thursday for the rest of the year, and so on. And, you know, that's what our time slot looks like. There hasn't been any talk of changing that based on one week from last week. And also, whenever a show changes, any show, even if it changes from 7 to 8 or 8 to 9 or backwards, you're going to see a drop because of just the trending, the way that people watch their shows. They forget, they don't update their DVR, and that number's always affected. SmackDown, when I was there, SmackDown switched 3 or 4 times, and that first week always took a big hit.
Hey, Nick.
Yeah, hey, what's up, Ross?
Well, you didn't have a question for me, so I got a question for you. I'm going to call you out in front of Taya. How far is Johnny Impact going to go on Survivor?
I don't know what she... I'm sure there's been bedside manner conversations or whatever, but here's my theory, all right? I think he's going to make it at least to the merge. And the reason I say that is because he's too valuable when it comes to challenges and just general, like, camp morale, which has been a big factor this season, if you're watching.
Camp morale, and he looks really hot. Okay? Come on.
Yeah. So I think he makes it at least to the merge, right? Now, I think that he's probably going to surprise folks. I'm pinning him in the top 4, personally. I think him and Christian are a dangerous alliance together, brains and brawn combined. So I think he's going to do well.
Final 4, huh?
Secrecy, so I can't say anything else.
Yeah, I don't want to hear what Taya has to say. She knows too much. But that's what I think is going to do.
If Impact brought back the Knockouts Tag Team Division, who would be your first pick as a partner?
That's a hard one. There's so many changes and stuff and shifts in people right now. So I would have to think about that. I don't think I could just make a quick decision. I and there's also some missing players that I feel that is making that. I don't know. Yeah, I'd have to think about it.
We know a lot about you from your wrestling days in Mexico, especially with AAA, being crowned as the Reina de Reinas champion. I think it was 945 days that you were champion, right?
Yes. Longest reigning champion.
Exactly. So my question is, are you willing to repeat that amazing record if crowned as Impact President's Knockout Champion?
Absolutely. I feel like when you become a champion in the face of a company and you're put, you know, in that position and have that responsibility, I would hold that like to all levels of importance. And you know, I will defend that championship wherever, whenever, against whoever, in whatever part of the world, and I'm completely prepared to do that. So bring it on.
Today we've got a question from Andrew Poole, who's like, would you describe the differences backstage between Impact Wrestling and Lucha Underground?
You can't compare apples to oranges and bananas and carrots. Like, two very different scenarios, because Lucha Underground is a tele-episodical, you know, television series, whereas Impact is a, right, you know, a traditionally run traditional wrestling show. So there's a lot of differences just in the way we film things, in the way the backstage vignettes are done. But I mean, the overall morale of the crew and the overall morale of the roster is so similar. I feel like we all feed off each other's energy. We're all there to work really, really hard. We all want to do something different, and I feel like, you know, to a certain degree, I always used to say that, like, the characters of the people that were on Lucha Underground were kind of a lot of misfits and a lot of, you know, underdogs. And sometimes I feel the same way at Impact, that some of us have been kind of not given the full opportunity, and Impact is doing that for us and putting us on that stage. And we are proving that we are the best. And our knockouts are putting on matches that are the best. And, you know, I don't care what anybody says, that's what I think. And our male roster is doing the same thing. Things are changing, things are shifting, and I feel like Impact has really, really turned this corner where, you know, we can stand with anybody in that ring. And it's really great. That's exactly how it is at Lucha, so I'm really proud to support both teams.
I feel like you guys need to have, like, somebody that's established, and I feel like yourself and Tessa can definitely be thought of when you mention Impact Wrestling as, like, yeah, these people represent Impact Wrestling.
I mean, Impact came around because I knew a lot of people that were working with them at the time, and the opportunity just, like, I came out of nowhere, really, because I wasn't expecting it due to contractual things and the way that things were written. But things change, and contracts change, and, you know, it's just things shift, and other people come in charge, and the opportunity was placed in front of me and John, and we couldn't be happier about it. I mean, I am so happy with the way that Tessa and I story and dynamic is right now. I would like to, I mean, I've been watching a lot of old wrestling matches and really just trying to be as creative as possible with what I'm bringing to the table, and I feel like Tessa is doing the same thing. And I just hope that this feud can go on for a very long time, you know? I want people to think of us as, compare our feud to some people such as the amazing Gail Kim and Awesome Kong, or, you know, something like a Trish and a Mickie James, or whatever it is. I mean, those people are legends in my eyes, and I am so far not at that level yet, but I would love for this feud to grow and evolve and be a long-term thing that could be taken anywhere and taken around the world and really be an example of the evolution of women's wrestling right now. Me coming from my background and her coming from her background can represent how two different, completely different people can create such an interesting, telling a story, an interesting story, and also just bring the wrestling, the high flying, the fast footwork, the, you know, absolutely all of that stuff that people talk about in you know, in male wrestling and the evolution of them, but in female wrestling as well, and bring the traditional side of storytelling. So I hope that we can just keep this going for a while, because this is really been a dream so far. So,
first of all,
lot in Mexico, you've worked a lot in America and Canada. What are some of the differences that you face when switching back and forth? Because a lot of the people that I've talked to explain maybe working a different side of the body, rolling instead of bumping, things like that.
I mean, obviously, when I first went to Mexico, I was straight out of Storm Wrestling Academy in Calgary. Shout out to Lance and everyone out there. So I really had I was not familiar with Lucha Style whatsoever. So that at first was really, really hard, like exactly all the things that you're mentioning. But I feel like now I can go between both styles and I try to blend them in my own way. Because that Lucha, I did Lucha Libre in Mexico for over 5 years. And that is a huge part of my career. So many of the ways that I do things are influenced by that style. So I enjoy, even though I was a ruda, I was a heel forever and ever and ever, and some people say you shouldn't be high-flying or whatever, I would still incorporate high-flying and moonsaults and crossbodies and tornillos and pescados and all this kind of stuff. And I also try to make my movements faster because it's more acrobatic down there. And then, I mean, depending on who I'm wrestling against, I can go right or left side. So I bet just over time you become used to changing back and forth and really just evolving with who you're wrestling against. And even when I was wrestling in Japan, because I had 2 tours in Japan, I was there with AAA and I was also there with Stardom. A lot of the influences with the girls in Stardom were from Mexico, like Yoshinai. I spent some time in Mexico, so we were able to use all three different styles and really do something different. So, I mean, it is fun to play with all the different styles of wrestling. That's why not one style is correct or wrong or whatever. It's to each their individual interpretation, and I think that the Taya Valkyrie style is a blend of all these things that I'm influenced.
Okay, we have a question from Lee Med, who'd like to know, is Lance Storm as intense as he seems?
I love Lance. Lance has such a great connection with all of his students. And he's always been there for me in December, it will be 8 years since my first professional match against him. Oh my God. He is very intense. As a teacher, he's so knowledgeable. He just wants to see the best, and he's so honest with all of his students. So on that level, yes, he is intense, but also he's such a nice person, such a good person, and I'm very proud that I and happy that I found him and his school, because I really think that was the foundation that led me to where I am today. Is him? He's a huge part of that. He's intense, but in the best way possible.
And since November is Survivor Series month, I am going to answer and ask my 123 cents question. This came in actually from Chad. So if you have questions, hit me up here on the Jittery Monkey page or over on the my 123 cents Facebook page. Also, be sure you're voting in the Who Should Have Been WWE Champion Tournament. It is a Facebook exclusive poll. New matchups are posted every day, so be sure to check that out. That'll wrap up, though, this week for sure. Chad says, Survivor Series looks to be several champion versus champion matches. Do you prefer this, or would you rather see an elimination match with teams made up of the champions? I prefer the teams. I am old school. I am traditionalist when it comes to Survivor Series, especially. I hated 1992 when they got away from the elimination matches, and then in 1998 they did it again with the Deadly Games tournament, which I understood the need to have the tournament. I wish they would have done it on a different show, though, because to me Survivor Series has to be, the 5-on-5 or the 4-on-4 elimination matches. And if you want to do champions versus champions in that way for Raw versus SmackDown, I guess I'm fine with that too. I would prefer it to be where we just save the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania for interpromotional battles, but I understand, that may not always be that may not always be possible. But I do prefer any day, every day, the elimination matches. And there's enough stories to tell, I think, on each brand that you could do that without getting interpromotional with it. However, I understand also the fun in doing these types of matches. I just don't like the last 2 years have been Raw versus SmackDown, and there's been, I don't know, I haven't been a huge fan of how it's been executed. But to me, again, keeping that elimination match alive is essential for Survivor Series. It'd be like having the Royal Rumble and not having a Battle Royal match on the Royal Rumble card. You know, Survivor Series, the whole point of it, the whole premise of it, was those elimination matches, and it's something that you keep fresh and you know, you don't get stale with those types of matches if you don't run them all the time. And this kind of goes back into the argument, too, of Elimination Chamber and the Hell in a Cell pay-per-views. I don't think those should be pay-per-views. Those should be once in a while type of matches that drop in when the story dictates, not when we have, okay, it's October, it's time for Hell in a Cell, and we have to do these matches. So again, kind of the same thing with Survivor Series, although Survivor Series, that Thanksgiving tradition, dating back to 1987, love it. Loved it then a lot. The way it's tweaked through the years, and I get it. You know, pro wrestling, WWE specifically, is not targeted to a 45-year-old man. I get that. I'm going to continue to watch. I'm not going to go anywhere. And I will use this podcast to vent my, I'm not going to say complaints, but vent my point of view and what I would like to see as a fan. But again, I know I'm not in that demographic anymore and haven't been for quite some time. So, Chad, thanks for the question, and we will talk again next week right here on My 123 Cents, the podcast. Everyone, have a great week.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.